Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing today, this rainy, rainy day?
Good. I almost needed a boat. You know, the little VW Beetle doesn't do so well in the rain. A lot of flooding going on.
I know. It's pretty fast. It hasn't really rained that much.
No, but it's raining hard. But we need it. We need it, right?
Absolutely.
And it's not too cold, so I'm not complaining. We've got a great show today, Lee. You know, oftentimes our program director will question the people that are on the show saying, is that really Atlanta business? But we've had a lot of authors lately.
I know.
And we did a little coaxing with our program director to let them know that this first guest, in fact, is all about business, about the business of the Beatles, about the business of John Lennon, and about the business of the latest book that she wrote, which would make a great holiday gift, by the way, Lee.
Absolutely. I saw it. It's like an encyclopedia.
It is. A lot of research went into that. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show this morning. We have Jude Sutherland Kessler, who is the author of the book that is the only documented, researched over 20 years, historical novel ever written on the life of John Lennon. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for having me, Lee. I really appreciate both of you having me in here.
Well, we are dying to know, where did it start and how did you begin this incredible novel?
Well, of course, I was a typical Beatles fan from the 60s, but about 20 years ago, I realized that although there had been many, many, many books written about the Beatles that were nonfiction, coffee table books, journals, diaries, day-by-day Beatles accounts, no one had ever written a novel, a documented, researched novel about John Lennon's life and how the Beatles came to be. So I started researching and finally ended up going to Liverpool to do interviews to tell the story as a novel, but to document it.
So what were some of the, I guess, insights into John's character that you found?
Well, John was very complex. When we went to his high school and interviewed one of the people that went to school with him, Dave Binion, who was the prefect or the head boy, Dave said, you know, John was a real salt. And then he paused and said, not a salt in the way that you think about it, but salt in an open wound. And John would always try to hurt you before you could hurt him, because so many times in his life, the people that should have been there for him were not. And he knew that ultimately in relationships, he was going to be wounded. So before he could get to know you, he'd test you by being mean to you and see if you would endure, if you'd last, or if you'd come back and say something funny or witty. He was a very difficult person to deal with.
Can you talk a little bit about how he got his history before the Beatles? Like what really kind of shaped him?
Sure. Probably the greatest influence in John's life was his mother, Julia. When John was in the early stages of high school at Quarry Bank, she told him that he had music in his bones, that his father had been a musician singing for the troops on the ships going back and forth from America to the front in World War II, and she played a banjo, actually, and performed at the Brookhouse Pub in Liverpool and was quite popular. And she said, you are destined to have a band and to perform. And he had been expelled from school for about 2 weeks for betting on school sporting events. And so she spent 2 weeks protecting him from his Aunt Mimi, who really reared John, and teaching him how to play the guitar and inspiring him to have a band. And in 1957, he formed that very first band, the Quarrymen, and they practiced in a fallout shelter, in a tin fallout shelter. And gradually, John culled the people that weren't serious about being in a band and began to add serious members. Paul McCartney was the first, then George Harrison, and of course, many years down the road, Ringo Starr. So it all started in that fallout shelter with just boys playing guitar.
How did he meet Paul McCartney?
He was playing at the Woolton Garden Fete in July of 1958, and 57, and a young boy came to watch them wearing a white sport coat and probably a pink carnation, and he had his guitar slung across his shoulder, and he watched the Quarrymen on the stage, and I can just imagine what he thought about them, because John could never remember the words to songs, and he made up his own lyrics when he couldn't remember. And sometimes he played the chords incorrectly, but he had a certain charisma, and this boy in the crowd thought, this band could be good if they had me. So after the performance, he went across the street to the church hall and introduced himself. And of course, that young boy was Paul McCartney. And about a week and a half later, John sent his friend, Ivan Vaughn, to invite Paul to join the band. So
was their personality seemed so different. How did they get along in real life?
they really didn't become bosom buddies. They really weren't what you would call friends, but they were very competitive one with the other. And so when one would write a song, it would spur the other one on to write. When one would do something unusual, the other one would say, well, I can top that. So it was a relationship that was very, although it wasn't a close pal, chummy relationship, the way John was friends with his best friend, Stu Sutcliffe. They were companionable and got along, but they were good for each other because they spurred each other on to be better than the other.
So there's a lot of knowledge here. Wow, 20 years of research. Tell us about the research.
I started out for 6 years collecting John Lennon and Beatles books, and I have over 300 in my home. And I have interview CDs and DVDs and periodicals and just everything you can ever imagine on the Beatles. And after 6 years, I realized that I couldn't really write about Liverpool and John's growing up years unless I actually went to Liverpool and smelled the smells of the city and heard the sounds and sat in the pubs and went to the schools. So in 1993, we started 7 years of going back and forth to Liverpool and interviewing all the people over there. And there's an encyclopedia of all the historical characters in the book, and these are the people that I met in my travels there.
Did you go to that fallout shelter? Was that still around?
I didn't go because that's in someone's, you know, backyard. But we went to every elementary school, kindergarten, out to the Casbah, Pete Best's home, to the Cavern Club, you name it. We walked all the streets. In fact, we put 700 miles on our rental car in the city of Liverpool alone.
What fun.
It was great.
I bet it was a lot of fun to research that. So he lived a short life. John Lennon died at what?
At age 40.
At age 40. From pre-Beatlemania to his death, what are the biggest changes you saw in him or in his character?
Well, this book only covers from his birth in 1940 until the 10th of December, 61, when he stepped onto that world stage as the Beatles, when they made a loose managerial agreement with Brian Epstein to take the band to the toppermost of the poppermost. But during those years, and I am writing the sequel to it right now, which will be called Shivering Inside, because he spent most of his Beatle years shivering inside, afraid, but trying to act, you know, very debonair and happy and like a Beatle. But in those early years, the loss of his mother left him with his Aunt Mimi when he was 5 years old, and she went off on a life of her own. She did not come back into his life until he was 15 years old. And they became best friends at age 15. He depended on her solely as his closest ally in life. But when he was 18, she was hit by a drunk driver and killed. And that transformed John from a very smart, witty boy who didn't really fit in into a cynical, mean, hostile boy who thought life was out to get him. And he spent the rest of his life trying to prove through fame and the band that he was worthy of love, that he was worthy of being cared for. But because that never happened through fame, through money, through meditation, through anything that ever happened to him, he continued to have a hole in his heart. And no matter what fame came to him or what power came to him, it was never enough.
How do you think he would like to be remembered? I mean, a lot of people talk about him as being an idealist or a working class hero. How do you think he would like to be remembered?
When he was very young, he said, if there is such a thing as a genius, I am one. And I think he'd like to be remembered as an artistic genius. He was very talented in art. As a writer, he wrote 2 books of poetry and prose. As a musician, as a man who worked for peace, as an innovator, I think he'd like to be remembered as the genius that he really was.
Did he think he was more talented than Paul McCartney?
Absolutely. I mean, it was his band, after all. He picked the members of that band. He wanted Paul in the band because Paul could tune a guitar, and Paul knew all the lyrics to songs. But we have to remember that John handpicked Paul, handpicked George, handpicked Ringo. So, yes, I think he thought that...
Did he resent Paul McCartney's fame?
Yes. He used to say people would play Yesterday when they introduced John, and he would roll his eyes and say, another McCartney song. Sure, he wanted to have the spotlight on him, and rightfully so. It was his group.
Jude, for our listeners, how can they acquire the book and then maybe just inspire them? You know, you have the idea to write a book. How do you go through with that? I mean, a lot of people have ideas. They inspire our listeners. Let them know how you got started and let them know that it can be done.
You can do it. you know, when I started this, people would say to me, oh, no, not another Beatles book. Even in Liverpool, people weren't very open to another thing written about the Beatles. And 20 years is a long time to work on a project. People would say, just push print. But if you really want to be right and to do a good job, hang with your project. Don't just do a mediocre job. Push your project to the goal line, and we self-publish. My husband formed Pen and Ink Publishing Company and went through all of the work that it takes to form a company and found a printer, found a person to do our cover. We actually went with Astrid Kircher, who did the picture on the front of the book, who photographed John in 1960, and it's her photograph that's on the front. But you can do all of the things you need to do, get the rights to use songs, do your copywriting. You can do it. It just takes time and perseverance. And when I was at the latest Beatles convention in Chicago last summer, they had 8 authors on the stage who were talking about their works. All of them but one self-published. It is the wave of the future. Self-publishing is where it's at in publishing right now. So if you're writing a book, hang in there and bring it to fruition. And the book can be found. There are really 3 places where you can get the book. Of course, Amazon.com, thefestforbeatlefans.com, and then our website is called On the Rock, like rock and roll. Some people say On the Rocks, plural, but it's On the Rock. Books.com, and I highly recommend going there because we have Beatles puzzles and trivia, and every month we highlight a reader of the book and tell their story. And the one who's being highlighted this month, Nancy Wilkins, has hundreds of rare Beatle photos, and it's really something people should see.
It's not a small book, Lee. It's almost 300 pages.
It'll take a while.
Yeah. And what's in the back? I see there's something in the back as well.
We have a CD with the Beatles' first manager, Alan Williams. It's an hour interview, and he is very colorful and says all sorts of interesting things. But he tells the story of these scalawags, or he calls them coffee house layabouts, who came into his Jacaranda Club when they were just 16 years old. George was 14 at that time. And he tells such fabulous stories about the Beatles, fab stories, that you'll definitely want to hear that.
Wonderful. I can't wait to dig in, Lee.
I know. Looks great. Should have been there.
Yeah, should have been there. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you.
We hope our listeners will be inspired. We also hope they'll reach out and purchase the book.
Thank you.
Looks like a good one. Great holiday gift. Speaking of holiday gifts, Lee, every year, you know my birthday's the day before Christmas. Guess what I get?
Shameless plug for you.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But guess what I always get for my birthday and Christmas?
What is it?
Something I would never buy myself. A massage.
There you go.
Yeah, a massage. Also, great for holiday gifts, I think. Massage gift certificates. Only appropriate that this morning we have Tom Gustaf on our show, who's the regional developer for Massage Heights. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you, Amy. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us about Massage Heights.
Massage Heights is a franchise massage, therapeutic massage concept. It began in 2004 in San Antonio, and they began franchising in 2006. And I am, as you mentioned, the regional developer for Atlanta, and we just opened our first location here in Atlanta at the corner of Abernathy and Roswell in Sandy Springs.
Right around the corner from the studio.
Indeed.
Conveniently located.
That sounds like a good power partner. What do you think?
Yes. Now, it's the first of how many in the plan?
We have a plan for 20 locations throughout the Atlanta metro within the next 5 years, and that's a minimum.
Wow, that's a lot of growth.
Indeed.
And it sounds like the massage industry overall is just really growing. Do you have any statistics on that?
Absolutely. The industry is burgeoning, actually, Amy. It's about an $11 to $15 billion per year industry, and that's not spa services. That's strictly massage, and it's growing at a rate of about 56% per year. And right now we're seeing that Generation Y, the 18 to 24-year-olds, about 94% of them believe that massage is a therapeutic necessity. And about 92% of Generation Xers, the older types of people, believe that massage therapy is an important daily regimen.
So this isn't something that's like insurance-driven. This is something they're doing because it feels good and they pay out-of-pocket for this, right?
Yes, Lee. It's more and more doctors are actually prescribing massage therapy, and not just chiropractors, but even general practitioners are prescribing it in lieu of pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. It reduces blood pressure. Of course, it's a stress reliever. It increases circulation. The health benefits are tremendous.
How often does, you know, are there different levels of users? I would imagine you have kind of the people who come regularly, and you have, you know, the special occasion people. Can you talk about what the difference is between those two extremes?
Sure. And we've only been open now for about just a little over 2 weeks, and we already have our regulars who have been
here. Wow. That's good. People get hooked.
Yes, indeed. In 2 weeks, we've had a couple of people, and we've had families who sign up. So, yes, you're absolutely correct. We have users who come in weekly.
Weekly. That would be like the most someone comes in is weekly, you think?
Pretty much. And we have the once a month type of people and the once a quarter. But mainly I would say we have about two visits per month is pretty normal.
That's your customer you're looking for is the two visits a month person?
Correct. And that's what the concept of Massage Heights is. It's a wellness retreat at your fingertips. We tend to be located in very busy shopping centers. Mm-hmm. For instance, where we are at the corner of Abernathy and Roswell is a very busy intersection with a very high-end grocery store there. So people come on a regular basis.
Right. And then, like, how does it work? Do you pay per time, or your model's a little different, isn't it?
Yes, we're a membership-driven
organization. How does that work?
Well, we actually have three different levels of membership that you can choose from, and each one of those levels includes one free massage per month. And then anytime you come in after that in that month, it can be one time or 30 times that month. It's only $39.99 for your massage. We also offer elevated services, which are hot stone therapy, a hot towel cold stone facial, and a peppermint foot scrub. And depending upon which level of membership you choose, those can be included as well.
Wow.
How did you get involved? Do you have a background of massage therapy or from
you
a
like
business
massages,
model?
You like massages, I bet.
Well, indeed. And Amy, that's your intro was very appropriate because I, too, received a gift certificate in a couple years ago to a massage concept here in town. And I had put it away for a while, and then finally one day I went back and picked it up and said, well, I might as well go try this out. And Lee, as you said, I was instantaneously hooked. And I had owned another business at the time, but I just kept going back. And I really liked it. And every time I went in there, I would notice that they were busy. I would notice that many different walks of life were there, a very good mixture of male and female. And I said, wow, there really must be something behind this. So when I sold my other business, I started looking into it much more closely.
And it seems like with society today, people are stressed out, and they do tend to still take care of themselves. So I would see where people would still go for massages, and it also enhances their sports performance and, you know, their sleeping and so many other advantages that are so well known. I found it fascinating, though, that you didn't have a massage background or, you know, even a medical background, because oftentimes those that open the massage clinic or a massage studio don't have the business background, which you do have.
Mm-hmm.
And from a business perspective, in the growth, and you were saying that being in a high traffic shopping area is good.
Yes.
Does that mean that you allow walk-ins?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We are open 7 days a week, 9 to 9, Monday through Friday.
Wow.
And also on Saturdays and Sundays we're open. So the idea is typically with massage therapy, if you have a therapist that you go to, he or she may be booked, you know, several weeks in advance. And with us, it's simply we welcome walk-ins. You can drop in and we will have appointment slots available.
So you don't have to be a member to go?
That's correct.
You benefit from membership because you get it's more affordable?
Absolutely. If you look at the membership, what it costs per month, and then if you're not a member in the elevated services, the membership ends up paying for itself many times over. And if you are a monthly member and you happen to not come in December, everything rolls over.
So you don't lose it.
You do not lose it. In January, you'd have two
twice
free.
As many.
Yes.
Right. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. How have you seen it evolve? I mean, massage at one point was, you know, kind of a shady thing. And then it became into, I guess, the chiropractors were really pushing it as a therapeutic thing. And now there's a bunch of spas. You know, the industry's evolved dramatically, I think, in the last probably 10 years or so.
Oh, yes, indeed. As I said, massage itself is about a $15 billion per year industry. And that's, again, not spa services, just simply massage. And that's growing at a rate of 56% per year. And the acceptance rate is absolutely burgeoning as well. And we have seen, and that's one of the reasons that I got into this, is we have seen so many people who are accepting it not as a luxury, which it is not. It's actually a health necessity and part of a daily health regimen.
Mm-hmm. And there's health benefits. I'm sure you have research on this. There's health benefits of coming just even once a month, you think? Or do you have to go more often than that to really achieve the health benefits?
Well, it would also depend. And I must qualify to say that I'm not a therapist, as Amy pointed out. But, of course, it also depends on one's needs. If you do have high blood pressure, if there are other medical reasons, or if it's chiropractor or other physician prescribed, then, of course, it would be a better idea to come more often.
Right.
If people are interested in learning more about the franchise and franchising opportunities, how can they find out about that?
They would contact me directly, especially in the Atlanta Metro. I'm available at our website or via my cell phone at all times, which is 770-331-9157.
Wow. Thank you for being on our show today. Tell us again the location of
this is the first one?
It's the first one in Atlanta. It's our pilot retreat, yes.
And then, but you have plans for half a dozen or so more?
Well, at least 20 more in the greater metro area over the next
5 years.
That
you'll be responsible for?
That's correct, yes. I'm looking for partners to help me build out the Atlanta area.
Wow. So do you have sites located already?
We do have site selection criteria, and we do have some sites already pre-selected, uh-huh. Yes.
But this is the one that's live right now?
It is live right now.
And the franchise is based in?
In San Antonio, Texas, yes.
Sounds like a great birthday gift for me, Lee. Birthday, Christmas.
I'm writing this down.
Yeah. Note to husband. Note to family. I think that sounds like a great idea. Thanks so much for being our guest today, and we hope people will reach out to you and find out more about massage and maybe visit your location.
And it's Massage Heights.
Massage Heights, yes, corner of Abernathy and Roswell in Sandy Springs.
And that's the website as well?
It is, massageheights.com.
Also a very intriguing franchise concept.
Yes.
Thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how to transition to the next guest, Lee, although it's a caring transition.
Caring?
A caring transition. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Angel Van Wy, who is the owner of Caring Transitions.
Thank you for having me today.
Angel, your story fascinated me. After how many years at Snap-on Tools, tell us the story.
Well, I was with Snap-on Tools. Actually, September would have been my 20th anniversary.
Wow.
I came in on the ground level, and over a course of 20 years, I grew into the position of operations supervisor for the entire Southeast. And we administered and kept on track approximately about 300 Snap-on franchisees out of my location.
That's a lot. Out of 8 states and 300 franchisees, that
yes.
was a lot of responsibility. Then what happened? Your career was eliminated with Snap-on, right?
It was. In January, after our big kickoff meeting to blast off 2008, we were brought in the very next week and told that they were going to close down the Southeast region and
wow.
and roll it up into one major division in Crystal Lake, Illinois.
So then what happened? What did you do?
Well, I was, of course, offered the opportunity
to go there, to Illinois?
To move uh-huh. to Illinois, which I have already lived in Illinois and knew I did not want to do that again.
It's cold.
And
you said, I like it here.
I do. My family is here, and I wanted to stay in the Atlanta area.
And so how did you come up with Caring Transitions?
Well, oddly enough, I attended a wedding last June in the great state of Texas, and the mother of the bride owned a very fascinating business where she helped downsize the elderly. Mm-hmm. And it just really struck a chord with me. I thought, what a neat concept, being able to help someone and yet make a living at the same time. And little did I know that that's where my journey would end.
So Caring Transition helps seniors relocate and transition their lives. To what extent?
Well, it really depends on what we call it a triggering event.
Mm-hmm.
There is something in the life that would trigger the need to either downsize or relocate or find senior living. And what we do is we find the triggering event, and then we learn what the end result is that the client needs. And what we do is we would form a blueprint from beginning to end, sit down with that client, and allow them to pick the items that they think they can handle themselves, and then we would fill in the gaps.
Can you walk us through? I'm still a little unclear on how this all works. Like, say, like my dad's 84,
mm-hmm.
and my mom died like 2 years ago.
Correct.
So that's a trigger event, I'm sure. Death of a spouse.
Absolutely.
So what would happen if I brought him to meet with you?
Well, generally, we would deal with the children of the elderly. It's a very overwhelming concept for a child to go in. And unfortunately, a lot of children look at their parents' belongings mm-hmm. as junk or stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've all labeled the things we want.
Absolutely. And then, you know, what are you going to do with 1,000 things that are left that you don't want?
Right.
And a lot of families will go in and they will attempt it themselves. But those items need to be liquidated and disposed of. But you have to do it in a manner that is respectful
right.
to your father.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to understand that we understand that is his heritage and that is his legacy. That is his life.
Right.
It is everything that he has worked for. And he doesn't want it to be just discarded
right.
as his junk. And so what we do is we go in, we would meet with him, we would give him the assurance that we will handle his property with care, and that we do care about the end result. And we would actually, he can be as involved, the family can be as involved as they want to be, or they can be as hands-off as they want to be.
Okay. And that sounds like a really nice situation
right.
to be able to have you come in and help from beginning to end, because that is... Especially if somebody's in a, like you said, a life-changing event.
Is that the main service you provide?
Well, yes, it is. But even when your father was in a 3,000-square-foot home.
Right.
Now he's by himself. He needs to transition either into a retirement living.
Right.
Or maybe he's even going to move into your in-law suite.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You've got to figure out. Most of these retirement homes and things are 1,000 square feet or less.
Right.
So what we would do is we would find out where he was going to go. We would go in and blueprint the space, go back into the home, help him determine what he can take.
Sure.
And that helps us determine there on the other side what we need to liquidate for him.
Mm-hmm. And then when you say liquidate, it isn't necessarily just donating it to charity. It could be selling it.
Oh, absolutely. It would be in the form of an estate sale,
uh-huh.
a tag sale. You know, eBay is our friend. Craigslist is our friend. Just any way that we could profit uh-huh. your father the most.
And I understand there's no upfront cost for the services, and oftentimes the costs are even covered in the sale of the items. Can you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. We would come in and do a free consultation, meet with the family. We would want the client to have people in his life that he's comfortable with, or she. And, you know, we're actually no pressure. We would just come in, meet, take a look at what they've got, and basically our fee is based on a percentage
of the sale,
of the gross proceeds of the sale.
Is there instances where you don't contract with a client because you don't see if there's enough value in it for you, or do you take everybody?
Right now, being a new business owner,
you take everybody.
Oh yeah, I haven't had the luxury to be able to turn
right.
down business.
How long have you been in business?
Opened the doors the second week of June of this year.
Oh, that's exciting. So you're yes. in your first year.
Yes.
But there are 30 locations throughout the U.S., is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you talk a little bit about how you chose this franchise?
Well,
because that's, you know, when you're in a you had a trigger moment.
I did. I had a very triggering
and
moment.
And then, so you had to decide what was the next step for you.
I did.
And there's, you know, a million franchises out there.
Right. Coming from a franchise background, helping administer franchises, I knew the benefits
that right.
would come with having a franchise behind me and a corporation behind me. And as I began doing my research, Caring Transitions is really the only company that offered a franchise in this base. Now, there were other companies where you could send them X amount of dollars and they would send you a manual how-to.
Right.
But that's where it ended.
When I saw the statistics that y'all sent me, 76 million baby boomers expected to enter the retirement over the next two decades and needing to downsize, that's a pretty powerful statistic when you're looking at a franchise. How do you go about marketing yourself?
Well, estatesales.net has become a really good friend. If you're into estate selling at all, estatesales.net covers the entire United States. So even if you want to spend your vacation going to estate sales, you can locate them on there. We also have a relationship with elder care. Mm-hmm. And if people go on to elder care and answer certain triggering questions, then elder care would in turn put them in contact with me.
So you see this primarily as something for the elderly, but I would see it also for kind of boomers that don't want to deal with it, that they can just kind of delegate this downsizing to someone else. Is mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe their kids have left to college and they want to move to a condo somewhere.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, with the market being the way it has been, there's been a lot of foreclosures.
Right.
And a lot of people are being forced to make decisions.
Sure.
And we have been involved with several clients that are not elderly, but they're in a position to where they have to downsize because of a foreclosure or trying to avoid foreclosure, and they just need to liquidate some
assets. Right,
some
and they don't
assets.
Have the skills to do eBay, or they don't have the desire to do this. And if you do this every day, you don't have the learning curve that I would have.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a big learning curve, too. I can't imagine trying to sell all that myself.
I had a garage sale once, and that was like a nightmare.
Yeah, no, I would rather call Caring Transitions. Do you ever get calls from people when a parent has passed away?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be a tough one, because I would think your services would be very helpful there.
Right. My brother, who is also my business partner, David, he and I have been raised in a pastor's family, and we have actually been in ministry together for over 25 years, and this business, really, we treat it as a ministry, and we have a genuine care for people, and we don't, it's just not a business. We mm-hmm. actually get involved, and every client we've had, we have kept in contact with.
That's great. That is great. It's wonderful, too, that you've taken a misfortune of the Snap-on tools and your layoff into making something so positive and helping others. Thanks for telling us about the franchise, about your business concept. How can people reach you?
They can reach me through caringtransitions.net, and also my business phone is 404-457-0712.
Wonderful. Lee, we're out of time.
Yes, we are. Another great show. Great job, Amy.
Y'all, thank you so much for being our guests today. We hope our listeners will reach out to you. And until next week, we all hope you have a great and somewhat dry week.
That's right. Check out episodes on iTunes.
Absolutely.
And AtlantaBusinessRadio.com.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day.